Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Another viewership record for Caitlin Clark. Plus, we talk about Tim Mulkey, gambling, and much more on the new Sports Media Watch podcast. This is John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. If you have not already, please subscribe to the podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Let's go ahead and jump right in. Caitlin Clark in Iowa against Holy Cross, right? 3.2 million viewers for Iowa against Holy Cross. What more can be said about the impact Caitlin Clark has had on viewership for this event? That is the largest audience for any women's tournament game prior to the Final Four on record. Sometimes I get in trouble saying that because I'll say it's the largest ever and then, oh wait, 2004 was higher, and you know, that's infuriating. I'm reasonably sure, but you know, you want me to say I'm 100% sure, but you know, I am 100% sure, but I'm just couching it. It's the largest ever for ESPN ABC outside of the women's Final Four. And CBS never aired anything other than the women's Final Four. They only aired the semifinals and final. So I'm saying it's the largest ever outside of the women's Final Four for the tournament. And that's against Holy Cross. Last night, Monday night, we're taping on Tuesday morning. Last night was against West Virginia, an actual athletic school, no offense to Holy Cross. And Iowa looked like they might lose, even on cable, given the lack of competition. Last night's number is going to be very interesting. But, I mean, to get 3.2 million viewers to watch a 16 seed versus a 1 in the women's tournament while the men are playing Gonzaga and Kansas wasn't much of a game. And by the way, what's happening right now in the women's tournament is incredible. The women's tournament is not a bigger draw than the men's. Gonzaga-Kansas more than doubled Caitlin Clark head-to-head. But the fact that Kansas and Gonzaga were on and Caitlin Clark still had 3.2 million viewers choosing her over that is a humongous win. Where people start to go off into Crazyville is when they say the women's tournament is a bigger draw than the men's, or there's greater interest. That's plainly not true. But the fact that the women's tournament could get 3.2 million for a first round game opposite a second round men's game is incredible. I mean, that's national championship level audience. The national championship was getting 3.2 million a few years ago. And Caitlin Clark against Holy Cross opposite a men's game got 3.2. That's just amazing. But again, it's not bigger than the men's game. The men's tournament is still the biggest draw here. For the first part of it, the men's tournament was getting, you know, off to a record pace. You'll notice CBS and Turner put out a press release after Thursday. They put out a press release after Friday, and they put out a press release after Saturday. but they didn't put one out after Sunday because those games on Sunday were wretched. The only one that was any good was one where I tuned out thinking it was over, and there was this incredible last-second comeback. Those games on Sunday were wretched, and the numbers were excellent by most standards, but like James Madison Duke, I think, was under 9 million, which for the first Sunday late window, 5 o'clock, with Duke in it, that's a bad number for that window. It's a great number by any other standard. So I'm sure the men's tournament is now below last year temporarily. Drew, I'll bring you in.
You know, explain this one to me, John, because I know this is how it's worked the last few years at least with the men's tournament, and that's having the exclusive windows Saturday and Sunday during the afternoon and then multiple games in the primetime window at night. To me, it seems like that should even be flipped, you know, put the exclusive windows in the primetime time slots and have the ability to kind of shift around games, flip around games during the day when, you know, there's probably, you know, more people viewing during those daytime slots. If one of the games is wretched, you can go to the other game. And then at nighttime, I think people are more apt to just like put it on because that's just what's on, you know?
Yeah, well, this is a holdover from the old days because obviously CBS, and you know, I'm sure you remember the days when CBS had it all to itself. They would have all the windows to itself. They wanted a few windows with just one game in it, you know, because I mean, it is advantageous to showcase a single game if you've got a Duke or whoever. And that has continued into the current format. It is definitely weird. You go from the frenetic four games at one time to all of a sudden it's one game on and it's not a good game. But it's just
well, it's flipped, right? You have the exclusive windows in the afternoon, right? And then you have multiple games at night. That seems backwards to me.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. From my perspective, maybe it's also just the idea that, you know, on weekends, the afternoon is the showcase. And especially because you got to remember, you know, when you're talking about the old days, CBS didn't air a night game on Sunday. There were no night games at all. They were all day games, noon, 2, and 5. So they would, you know, they would still have maybe a standalone at noon and maybe a standalone at 2 and then a whole bunch of regional ones at 5. I don't even remember how they used to do this, but they would only air the 3 windows because of 60 minutes. So it was an opportunity too when TBS and TBS started splitting it to put those Sunday night games on so they could actually do more of a standalone window in that 60 minutes lead in. That 60 minutes lead in window does really well. So you want to showcase, a Duke, you know, you want to showcase in that 2:30 window, you know, Kansas, Kentucky. I mean, that's what those standalone windows are for. And the afternoon, maybe not Saturday afternoon, but certainly, you know, Sunday afternoon is prime time in TV. I mean, that's where the NFL gets all.
Yeah. I don't know. It just when you have, you know, the first two rounds where it's constant games, right? It does feel weird to go from that to having just one game to tune into in the afternoon. John, I did want to get your opinion on the strong men's ratings for the first round, because when we discussed this last week, we talked about how, you know, upsets and Cinderella stories, that's kind of what drives the rating strength of the first few days of the men's tournament. But we didn't really get much of that this year. We got a lot of chalk. We got, you know, Oakland's win over Kentucky. We got Grand Canyon. But other than that, there weren't too many real Cinderella stories. So why do you think that the ratings were so strong this year?
Well, I mean, the ratings are always going to be strong for the men's tournament because it's not because of any individual game. And except for Sunday, the games were good. You know, there was always a good game on somewhere, some upset happening somewhere. There were upsets this year. They just didn't happen in the second round. They happened in the first. And the second round was the reality check that usually doesn't happen until the Sweet 16. So there were some upsets. Oakland obviously beating Kentucky. James Madison beating Wisconsin. But the men's tournament is always going to do well every year. This is going to be a record for those first couple days. The men's tournament is defined by what happens the rest of the way. what happens into the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight and the Final Four, right? So, you know, right now it's a very interesting set of circumstances because it could go either way. You could end up with UNC and Duke in the national championship, right? That's not going to happen probably, but it could happen. You could also end up with, like, you know, UConn blowing out Houston. So, I mean, we still don't know after week one how this tournament is going to be remembered as a ratings draw. There's just a lot to be determined. It's good to have the chalk, but within that chalk, you could have some pretty unappealing matchups as well.
Ironic if the first year that Jim Nance is not calling the tournament, Houston goes and wins it.
And it's better for him to watch as a fan and not have to pretend to be objective.
So sure.
It'll be better for him. And he's going to do the trophy presentation, I believe, too.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, well, that's...
I think that's part of his deal.
That's a fun little media storyline to follow then. I do want to get back to Caitlin Clark, though, and this number against Holy Cross, which, I mean, 3.23 million. She obviously got that prime time slot on ABC at 3 p.m. on Saturday. But to me, this is just inexplicable. I mean, this is a 1 versus 16, yeah. Right? This is a guaranteed going to be a dog of a game. This is not going to be competitive at all. I don't believe it was competitive. I didn't watch this. I was actually watching that Gonzaga-Kansas matchup instead. But to the fact that, you know, what is like over 10 million people watching college basketball, either men's or women's, at the same time is pretty incredible.
Yeah, look, obviously my thought is that it's taking a little bit away from the men's and also adding viewers that weren't going to be watching anyway. And so the sport is growing because of what we're seeing here. I think that you're right. That's a lot of viewers watching college basketball Saturday at 3:30. Let's talk a little bit about the wisdom of the scheduling here. You know, I don't always praise ESPN ABC, but this was really smart scheduling, putting Caitlin Clark on Saturday and Monday, right? Both this week and next. So assuming, of course, that they get through the Saturday game. So ABC has Saturday and Sunday windows. But by doing Saturday and Monday, rather than Friday and Sunday, you get one unopposed window Monday night. And then next week, you get two unopposed windows because the Sweet 16 games, the men's tournaments, and the Elite Eight, that's in prime time on TBS. And then, of course, on the Monday, there's no men's games at all. So the opportunity here for 5, 6, you know, with Caitlin Clark involved, maybe 7 or 8 million. Like, we could, I mean, honestly, why not? If you're getting 3.2 million against Holy Cross, you know, I mean.
And we know what's coming up if LSU and Iowa both win on that Monday, on next Monday. It's going to be a rematch of last year's title game. So, and we'll get into the Kim Mulkey stuff, I'm sure. But, I mean, that has the potential to, I don't know, I won't go this far, but I think that has the potential even come close to what last year's national title game got.
I agree. I think it'll be one of the most watched basketball games ever in ESPN. It won't be the most watched because ESPN has had a couple of NBA Eastern Conference Finals game sevens that were like 12 and 13 million. I mean, it's not going to get to that point. But 10 million is in play for Iowa LSU on a Monday night, even on ESPN.
I think, you know, if this Washington Post article comes out, that is only going to help viewership, especially if it is, you know, a bombshell like some of us are expecting here. If it is something that is actually going to play into the narrative of the game, that is just perfect morning show fodder. It's going to, you know, penetrate every, you know, corner of media, even if you're not a sports fan. People will be highly in tune with what is happening in that game.
Yeah, and then the momentum carrying into the Friday Final Four games. Remember, the women's tournament, Monday is the Elite Eight, Friday is the Final Four. There's no men's game in between. So whatever happens in that game carrying through into the Final Four for the winner, assuming, of course, that either of them win. Because Iowa came pretty darn close to losing yesterday, and LSU certainly did not look very impressive. Frankly, Iowa didn't look very impressive against Holy Cross either, which is one of the reasons why the viewership was so good. It wasn't a rout. So it is entirely possible. You know, in my bracket, I actually have neither of them getting out of their region. I have Colorado getting out. I'm not even sure if Colorado's still in it. Is Colorado still in
it? They are. It is, I believe, Iowa and Colorado on Friday. On Saturday.
Yeah, my bracket, I've got Colorado beating Iowa and then beating LSU. You want to know why? First day of the season, back in November, Colorado beat LSU, and it was the only game that I caught any part of live all year long. So I was like, yeah, Colorado's got to be pretty good.
Let's actually take a moment to talk about how the bracket's shaking out for the women, because it is, quite honestly, what you would want if you're ESPN, the NCAA, etc. Quite chalky. You've kept pretty much every major team in there. You have UConn, Iowa, LSU, Baylor, South Carolina, of course, Notre Dame. These are all teams with pedigree in the women's game. And if you look, you know, just by seeding itself, you have, you know, the Albany 1 region, that is all chalk. You have the 1-4 seeds left. You know, the Portland 4, that is all chalk. You have 1-4 seed. Albany 2, you have 1, 2, 3, and 5. And then I believe you have the same thing in Portland 3. Although no, you have Duke, who's a 7, but you know, it stands as, you know, pretty much every one of the top 4 seeds, bar, you know, a couple of exceptions, have made it through to the Sweet 16, and that's exactly what you want going into the end of the tournament here.
Well, I mean, it's a women's tournament. Now, look, the growth of the women's game is real. It's been amazing to watch. I keep hammering the UConn, but the UConn era was horrible. And we kept getting gaslit by people trying to tell us that, oh, no, this is great. It was horrible. And the women's game now has been steadily improving. All of these contenders, and now even the second tier of teams can beat you any day, right? I don't know who's on West Virginia, but they came pretty close last night. And eventually, the women's game is going to get to where the men's game is. Might not be for another, you know, to get fully where the men's game is going to take a little while, like maybe 20 years even. But in terms of the depth, in terms of having 68 teams where any one of them can win, which is not necessarily a good thing, as you've seen on the men's side. But, you know, ultimately, that's what you're going for. And so the chalk is there now, but you can see the beginnings of that starting to fray with some of the results that we saw from this weekend. And I think that's a good thing in the long term. But of course, you do want your best teams. In fact, for the men, you know, their bracket looks pretty good too, right? Mm-hmm. And I think NC State is the only double-digit seed, and they're the ACC champion. That's what you want, right? And so it doesn't necessarily mean the ratings are going to be great, because within both men and women, there are teams who are great that aren't going to be great for ratings, right? If the Final Four is like UConn beating up people on the men's side, isn't it funny, by the way, that for years the biggest problem for the women was UConn just running over everybody? And now the men have that problem. It's always UConn, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
The San Antonio Spurs of college basketball over there in stores. But
there's a fascinating tweet I saw from Sportico this morning about the spending of high-level Division I schools, football versus basketball. And of course, UConn does not have a Power 5 football program, but they are still...
They played in an Orange Bowl, didn't they?
They did. But, you know, they're an independent now, but of course, they still do compete at that level for all intents and purposes. But UConn is actually the only school in that echelon of universities that spends more on basketball than they do on football. And certainly those results are paying off.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have consistently been a team since they broke onto the scene in 99, really, that has ranked with the top-level blue bloods, even though they're not really a blue blood. They are as dominant now on the men's side as they've ever been. And, you know, if when it's all said and done, Gino and Paige Beckers are hoisting the trophy, that's not going to be shocking at all. That's not going to be shocking. No one thinks about UConn anymore, and it's great for the women's game that that era is over. But they're still good. They can still sneak in and win a title, right? I don't think that'll be bad for the ratings either. Like, I call them the San Antonio Spurs of basketball. The UConn men are the San Antonio Spurs of basketball. The UConn women were a ratings drag because no one could beat them. But if you put UConn in, you know, good competitive games, they can still draw. They're not, you know, they're only a drag if they're winning every single game. So I do think it won't be a bad thing if Paige Beckers and company get in there. You know, UConn versus South Carolina, I think, is a possible final, right?
Correct, yeah.
So, you know, that's 2 years ago they bet in the final, and the viewership was pretty good. It wasn't what we saw with Caitlin Clark, but it was, at the time, a milestone audience. So I think for the women's side, there's a lot of good stuff. We have to talk about the not-so-good stuff, too. Let's talk about the Kim Mulkey situation.
Yeah. Well, this you know, went on my radar over the weekend, like it did many people's, you know, just seeing a few minutes of her press conference, really quite attacking of journalism as an institution, the Washington Post specifically, even citing the writer that is going to publish a story, Kent Babb, who has done many you know, long form investigative piece for the Washington Post in the past. And let's be honest, she came off as really hypocritical. I mean, the part of this, you know, really combative press conference that stood out to me the most was when she was describing the process of this piece, the investigation of this piece, saying that she had been contacted 2 years ago about, you know, answering questions to this reporter about what he is investigating. And then saying in the same breath almost that Babb got back to her last Tuesday, a few days before the tournament started, asking her, you know, about more than a dozen questions, and saying, well, she had no time to respond because Babb wanted a response by Thursday.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, so gave her about 48 hours. I mean, how do you say something like that, not realizing, well, maybe I should have gotten ahead of this in the 2 years that I knew that he was investigating something? I don't know. To me, this is just a classic example of someone trying to stoke distrust in the media, but obviously her strategy has backfired. I mean, whoever is her crisis communications team over there at LSU is really doing a poor job, because now everyone in the world wants to know what the hell is going to be in this article.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, everyone talks about the Streisand effect adding more attention. You know, I don't necessarily, you know, to me, I do, obviously the 2 year timeline is significant because that goes back to her time. I mean, if you're talking 2 years, I mean, it must have been around when Brittany Griner was in Russia, maybe. And Brittany returned in 2022, then played the 2023 season. So the controversy with Kim Mulkey and Brittany Griner dates back to then. You know, and I imagine there was some interest in Kim Mulkey, and, you know, based on that. I do wonder, like, what motivated the desire to do a profile on Kim Mulkey. I suspect there's some smoke there. right? I suspect there's a lot of people who have had bad experiences with her. And maybe, you know, through the grapevine, that gets to a reporter. Kent Babb wrote a story about Brian Kelly when he got to LSU, so he's already kind of on the LSU beat. The only thing that makes me a little uncomfortable is, like, are we going after Kim Mulkey because she's done bad things, or are we going after Kim Mulkey because we don't like her? Because I'm not doing any of that high school stuff. I'm not interested in the lunch table. So are we going after Kim Mulkey because there's stuff there that she's done, or are we going after her because we don't like how cold she was to Brittany Griner? We don't like what she said about COVID or whatever, because I'm not interested in that. If there's smoke there, if there are things that she's done, then yeah, it needs to be reported. But if it's just like, you know, I don't like this person, let's dig some stuff up on her. I'm not saying that's what Kent Babb's doing, but honestly, that's what a lot of the people who are looking forward to this report, that is their motivation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not there for that.
That's a great point. Like, by doing what she did and getting out ahead of it, now the onus is kind of on Babb to really cash the check here, right? He's got to, you know, stick the landing, and the story has to be actually of some substance, of some significance. It can't really be bordering on a hit piece. I mean, I'm sure there is some substance there. Otherwise, you don't investigate a story for 2 years without there being something there. But how significant is what becomes the question here. And I guess that is the barometer that this will be measured on now, considering that Mulkey has come out firing.
Yep. Well, look, hey, here's the simple reality. He's abrasive, colorful, very Trumpian, right? Very colorful, very abrasive, and me personally, I don't care. I'm not offended by Kim Mulkey. You know, I didn't like how cold she was to Brittany Griner, but you know, that was pretty much it. I'm not feeling like I can't wait for this story. I can't wait for the Washington Post to spill the tea. You know, I'm not on board with that. But
and you're better than most of us, John, because I can't wait for the Washington Post to spill the tea. And it's not because I have any sort of, you know, hate for Kim Mulkey at all. I do agree that the way she handled the Griner situation was pretty messed up, to say the least.
But it was.
I'm not going to cast dispersions on somebody just because of their political beliefs.
Yeah, and look, you deserve criticism for that. You know, that's just interpersonal cruelty, right? For COVID comments, I don't care. I mean, I'm sure there's some people out there who are upset about that, but whatever. I think when all is said and done, you know, I understand why she feels as angry as she does. And as you said, it's going to depend on what's in the story. I cannot imagine that a 2-year report is just going to be Kim Mulkey says offensive things occasionally. I can't imagine that. So there's got to be more to it than that. Because if that's all it is, why would you waste 2 years pursuing that story?
Exactly. And then it looks a little bit suspicious that this is going to come out during the tournament.
Yeah, that's another thing too that I really hate when people do not. Again, if Kim Mulkey has not been cooperating and the timeline just shifts and shifts. But, you know, there's something to be said for overshadowing an event. And, you know, people want to talk about how much they support the women's game. And it's like, you know, maybe put this out in like February. You know, it will affect the LSU team. It's not the job of a journalist to be an advocate. It's not the job of a journalist to care if what they're reporting is inconvenient for people even related to the subject of the story. It's not the job of a journalist to do that.
No, this is, you know, but it's the job of, you know, the suits at the Washington Post to maximize the
right, exactly,
the impact of any story, right? So if you're going to write a story on Kim Mulkey, and you know, presumably this one is going to be negative and ruffle some feathers, the best time to release that is going to be during the women's tournament when there's the most eyeballs on the sport.
Exactly. And you know, look, I don't believe it's the job of a journalist to be an advocate or any of those things, but a lot of people do. And it is kind of interesting. You are creating a circumstance where it's not just Kim Mulkey who's affected, it's Angel Reese, it's Flaje Johnson, it's all the players on that team. You know, it is what it is. So let's just bring this in here. Some news breaking Tuesday morning. The NFL plans to play on Christmas Day this year, despite the fact that it's a Wednesday. And this is a big surprise to a lot of people. Apparently, it is a reversal of the league's previous stance. That is going to be very interesting. This is the biggest example yet of the NFL caring more about ratings and revenue than the teams. And I didn't think they would do it because it's not necessary. I mean, realistically, the Christmas games have been great for the NFL, but it's like three games. And like both times the NFL has done the Christmas triple header, this year and last, they got bigger numbers on the day before. They got bigger numbers on Christmas Eve, right? So, I mean, like, obviously, for the NFL, you don't want to just pass on a great viewership opportunity, but like at the expense of the quality of the game, like, it's there's no way there's not going to be complaining among the players and teams involved in Wednesday night in week 16. The only other Wednesday night game was the opener in 2012. So obviously it's the opener. It's not a big deal. This is by far much more so than just Thursday night football. The NFL saying we don't care about the players' convenience, even the on-field product, competitive balance. We want those ratings. And I don't know that it's worth it. I mean, unless the NFL really enjoys headlines about how badly it beats the NBA, but it can get those headlines like next month from the draft. I really don't get what the benefit is to the NFL to do this.
Well, sure, I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's marginal, but Christmas Day is just such a great viewership day. I mean, that's a big thing to sacrifice. And, you know, I guess you bring up a good point. It doesn't have to be three games. It could be one or two, but
I mean, not to cut you off, I actually think the NFL does like the headlines about how badly it beats the other sports, which is crazy.
Well, of course, like who wouldn't? But I don't think that's the reason though, right? I think they've done the analysis here and determined Christmas Day is just too appealing, right? There's the viewership is too large. It's like having an extra Thanksgiving Day almost.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the thing is to me that the NFL is a big enough television draw that games on Christmas are nice, but they're not essential. Like, it's essential to the NBA to be on Christmas. For the NFL, it's just extra. If they really do find a way to pull off games on a Wednesday in week 16 without it being a complete joke as far as how the players and coaches and organizations feel about it, who knows? But that was something that just broke today. One more thing on the NFL. If you're the NBA, I don't know if this is possible, but if you're the NBA and you have to deal with the NFL competing every year, at least get a lead in from it. You know, college basketball got its largest audience since 2008 because of Michigan State, Arizona airing after the NFL on Thanksgiving. If you're ESPN and ABC, you say, okay, well, give us a 1 o'clock game. We'll lead into the NBA. And that will be a nice number for the NBA. Remember, the most watched NBA game ever on Christmas was Magic Bulls when Michael Jordan was retired, right? And it was still Magic Bulls because it had a lead-in from the NFL. So if you're the NBA, you can make a little lemonade out of these lemons if you can get a lead-in from the NFL. Of course, the NFL, which has starved the World Series of a lead-in for several years in a row now, probably isn't going to make that happen. But if you're the NBA, you could at least try to see if it's a possibility. But let's go ahead and shift gears. We're talking about leagues just being reckless, doing dumb things. We got to talk about gambling. Scott, man, it's such a joke now, man. So yesterday, Monday, we're taping Tuesday morning, was the news breaking about Jontay Porter, a player very few people have ever heard of, but he is the brother of Michael Porter Jr. of the Denver Nuggets. And being involved in suspicious prop bets where, you know, people were heavily betting the under for him, because apparently you can bet the under for players like Jontay Porter. And betting the under for him in games that he would exit early. Now, my question to someone who doesn't gamble at all is, why in the world would those bets even still be legitimate? Aren't they based on, being able to play?
I guess the technicality that they got through is if they enter the game, then the bet is valid,
if
right?
If they exit due to injury, the bet should not be valid. And unless it's, I mean, if they exit due to injury in the first or second quarter, the bet should not be valid. That's an easy way to put a stop to this. Or a base level of minutes that a player has to play for the bet to qualify. But
that's just never how it's traditionally worked. But, my read on this situation as someone who, you know, has an interest in gambling and has followed it for some time is just, how obvious this is to all the sports book operators when something like this happens. And this is why I think educating the players on this is like really, really key here, because we don't want to see more stories like this. When there's a suspicious volume of gambling on a Jonte Porter player prop, that is the biggest red flag you could ever give to these sportsbook operators. They're going to immediately look at this game and say, all right, what happened here? Why is everyone betting this random player's under? And then he exits, presumably with an illness, or, you know, that is the most suspicious thing you could ever do. And I think if players realize that, they would never get involved in something like this. But of course, you know, as a media podcast, this is all in the backdrop of, you know, gambling companies are quite literally funding this industry in many ways right now. Yeah. So it is a very weird time if you're an ESPN or any one of the NBA's broadcast partners to, you know, report on this story, knowing where much of your funding is coming from.
Well, you know, and Reese Davis got in trouble for that the other day, making an on-air joke saying that it wasn't gambling. It was just a risk-free investment. I mean, he was joking. People who get upset by jokes are the most bothersome people on the planet. But I do understand, like, obviously, given the optics. But, you know, I get it from the standpoint of you work for a company that operates a sports book now, or at least has its brand name on a sports book. But Reese didn't sign up to work for that company. He signed up to work for ESPN, Disney-owned ESPN. How many ever years he joined the company? He didn't sign up to work for Penn National, right? And so, you know, I find it hard to be too critical of him. But yes, things are getting late early. The Ohtani circumstance we have not discussed, but obviously, Ohtani's not going down for any of this, but the fact that he's so close to a story involving $4.5 million in illegal betting, or at least they say it's illegal betting with a bookie, is crazy. He's the biggest star in baseball. Jonte Porter is not. So, Jonte Porter has done worse, but it's far worse for baseball for Ohtani to be slightly related to this. You know, I was on a conference call Monday for ESPN Baseball, and I asked Carl Ravitch and company, you know, is there such a thing as any publicity is good publicity? And yeah, there is, obviously. Ohtani's in the news. People are hearing about him. He's tainted right now a little bit, but he's not tainted the way that, you know, Julio Urias is, right? Or Wander Franco, right? I'd much rather have this than those circumstances. So, you know, but it is still something that it brings down the quality of the game, and it brings down, you know, the atmosphere a bit. One of the things that Carl Ravitch said was baseball is held to a higher standard than the other sports. And he's right, because obviously, you know, Calvin Ridley bet and came back to football, you know, and the same thing with steroids in football. But I do think that there's a reason why people feel the way they do about gambling. And even though baseball does have to deal with more of a microscope on those bad acts than other leagues, if you get to a point where someone's betting on the games, I don't care if you're the NBA or the NFL or whoever, you're not going to get a free pass on that. So everyone needs to tighten this thing up a bit. I am not a believer that people only watch sports because they're gambling or playing fantasy. I just don't believe that. There's too much interest. And, you know, I'm not saying people who do this stuff are degenerates. I'm not saying that. But most people, I don't think most people are doing this. Most people you see in the stands when you cut to the fans or whatever. I don't think the grandfathers sitting with their grandkid watching the game are doing it because they've got a bet on it. And so the idea that this has to be everything, and without this, you know, we don't have anything, I just don't buy it. This is sports. It's been around for 150 years. And yeah, gambling's been a part of it for all 150 of those years, right? And, you know, when I say sports being around for 150 years, I mean in this form, organized, professional, amateur sports. I just don't agree with that. I will add someone on Twitter said this, and I had actually kind of had the same thought as well. You kind of get a little bit of that COVID feeling from this, where not necessarily it's two different stories, but where the first thing comes through and you're like, we're not going to be able to get rid of this, are we? This is going to get worse before it gets better. And you know, I think Ohtani was kind of like when they canceled Indian Wells tennis, and you're like, God. And you know, as time goes on, it's going to get more and more serious.
Oh, absolutely. This is a story that is going to come out in drips and drabs. In many ways, like you said, that could actually be good for baseball in some weird sense, where they're getting attention during a time of year where they're not getting much attention traditionally. But the whole thing is very strange, because I remember seeing stories about Ohtani's interpreter, you know, last year, 2 years ago, and about the closeness of their relationship and how much he trusts this guy. And for now, the PR machine to kind of feed Ohtani his lines and talk about how he was not involved in this, it obviously doesn't add up, right?
I kind of disagree, because the only way this would happen where the money is stolen from him is if he trusts someone implicitly and doesn't ever think to himself. Like, that's always the way the biggest crimes are committed, by people who, you know, you would never think would do them, right? By people who you have in your circle, you know, your inner circle.
The strange thing is, as Americans, as non-Japanese speakers, we know so little about the man, Shohei Ohtani, right? He's so guarded, and his circle seems very insular. Nothing really ever gets out. I mean, we saw this with the coverage of his free agency, right? The American media didn't know. No one in the media knew what was going on. And so you're getting stories about him flying to Toronto, and then 4 hours later, he's signed with the Dodgers. So that just adds another layer to this. If we had an idea of what Shohei Ohtani was as a person, maybe we could make better judgments on this story, but we really just don't. So the drip of this story is going to be really fascinating when more details come out about what happened.
Who knows how far this will go. I do think it's not surprising to me if he did trust this guy and was just careless enough to let the guy have access to all of his funds and all of these things. And it's not going to shock me if he's lying to everybody either. We'll see what happens.
All right, John, good podcast. Why don't we go ahead and close it out?
Yeah, well, very busy week, very interesting stuff. We'll see what's in store next week as the women's tournament and the men's tournament roll along.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.